Good morning and welcome to the Covanta Holding Corporation second quarter conference call. This call is being recorded and an archived recording will be available after the end of the conference call and can be accessed through the Debt Investor Information section of the Covanta Investor Relations website. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Jim Riley, Covanta's Treasurer. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Anthony, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining Covanta's second quarter earnings conference call. Joining me on the call today is Greg Cam, our CFO. After prepared comments, we will take your questions. During today's prepared remarks, we will be referencing certain slides that we prepared to supplement the call. Registered users can access the slides now or after the call through the Debt Investor Information Portal on our website at www.covanta.com. Call participants should also see the earnings release for a discussion of our usage of forward-looking statements and non-GAAP financial measures. Before I turn the call over to Greg, I'd like to quickly cover a few points relating to the separation of the European operations. The formal legal separation of the European business took effect on July 2, 2022. Covanta continues to provide certain support services to the European business under a transitional services agreement. We expect that the European business will operate on a fully standalone basis by mid-2023. Since the separation took place after June 30th, our second quarter consolidated results continue to include the revenues and operating income of the unrestricted European and Asian entities. We've included certain disclosures in the MD&A section of our financial statements regarding the P&L contribution from the unrestricted subsidiaries. I'd note as well that the second quarter consolidated results reflect the receipt of a $16 million cash dividend from Europe that was received prior to separation. This cash dividend is reflected on the cash flow statement as dividends from unconsolidated investments. Lastly, in the deck today, for ease of comparison, we've included a legend on certain slides that distinguishes North American results from those of the unrestricted subsidiaries. With that, I'll turn the call over to Greg.
Thanks, Jim, and good morning, everyone. I'm pleased to participate in my first call as CFO and to have the opportunity to review Covanta's second quarter results. The resiliency of Covanta's business model was on full display in the second quarter, as our teams delivered very strong results, building on good momentum from the first quarter. The business continued to benefit from steady growth in waste revenue, as well as higher pricing for energy and recycled metals, that enabled us to more than offset increased inflationary pressures during the period. Revenue was up 13% year over year and adjusted EBITDA up 46%, underscoring the operating leverage inherent in our business model. I'll start on slide 3 and review certain key performance indicators that underpin these results. During the second quarter, we processed and diverted 5.3 million tons of waste from landfill, up from 5.2 in the prior year. That's the equivalent of removing nearly 1 million cars from the road. Boiler availability in the second quarter slipped slightly year over year to 89.7%, but increased relative to the first quarter as we completed a relatively heavy outage schedule. Overall, for 2022, we expect our waste energy plant production to remain consistent with prior periods. On the revenue pricing side, waste energy tip fees were up 7.6% year over year, reflecting both inflation-linked escalation under long-term contracts, improved pricing on new contracts, and a favorable waste mix, including higher levels of profiled waste volumes. Our commercial teams continue to focus on driving higher prices, supported by declining landfill capacity, rising costs for long-haul waste transportation, and growing demand for landfill diversion, all of which remain key secular growth drivers for our business. High electricity prices were a material benefit in the quarter, with average realized price up 36% year over year. As you're aware, at the end of 2021, we acted to dramatically reduce our energy market exposure, and as a result, have roughly 80% of our production either hedged or under contract through 24. So we capture this benefit on 20% of the portfolio that remains exposed. Power pricing continues to be strong in the third quarter, and since we're paid on the fuel we have to on our fuel and have no spread to cover, we anticipate power pricing will remain a positive impact on our exposed market output. Recycled metal prices were also strong in the second quarter, with our average realized ferrous and non-ferrous pricing per ton up 6% and 25% respectively year over year. I'll now discuss the year-over-year drivers of revenue for the quarter more specifically. On slide four. As Jim mentioned on this and coming slides, we have broken out for the ease of comparison to reported financials, North American metrics from the consolidated metrics that contain the European and Asian unrestricted subs. I'll speak only to the North American metrics. In the second quarter, North American revenue was up roughly 12% to $557 million, with strength across the board. Higher energy prices, even with much of our output already hedged, as well as higher sales prices for renewable energy certificates, contribute $23 million to revenue growth. Increased tip fees contribute another $12 million in revenue terms. In addition, improved waste flows from service fee clients and contractual escalators led to a $6 million increase in service fee revenue. Our environmental solutions platform also contributed to grow rapidly, offering a menu of sustainable options for commercial and industrial customers who are increasingly looking for non-landfill alternatives for their waste. Revenue at our material processing facilities grew materially, up $18 million year over year. Now turning to adjusted EBITDA, I'll refer to slide five. We generated adjusted EBITDA of $146 million in the second quarter with year-over-year growth of $38 million, or approximately 35%, which was supported by strong commodity price growth. As is typical in our business model, the $27 million year-over-year increase in commodity pricing in the quarter flowed directly from revenue to adjusted EBITDA, with gains from both energy and metal market prices driving meaningful growth. We also added $24 million adjusted EBITDA in the quarter from across other areas of the business, including higher waste prices and service fees, growth in environmental solutions. These benefits more than offset inflationary cost pressures that we experienced in the quarter. This is a resilient business model that should perform well in an inflationary environment. Moving to cash flow. First, I'd like to note that we have adjusted our presentation for free cash flow. Historically, free cash flow was defined as operating cash flow less maintenance CapEx. In today's materials and going forward, free cash flow represents operating cash flow less maintenance and growth expenditures. For the second quarter, excluding the European Asian subsidiary contributions, Covanta generated $45 million of free cash flow, which was down $15 million as compared to 21. Strong growth in adjusted EBITDA in the quarter was offset by increased maintenance spending, higher cash interest associated with our new capital structure, as well as working capital timing, including the payment of various non-recurring transaction-related costs. Now turning revenue for the first half of 22, I'll refer to slide 7. Revenue for the first half was $1.095 billion, and up over 10% compared to the prior year. Strength again was across the board with higher energy prices and continued growth in our environmental services platform, the two primary drivers. Now turning to slide 8, adjusted EBITDA for the half. We generated adjusted EBITDA of $243 million, an increase of $37 million or 18% over the prior year. Strong commodity price growth of $57 million was offset by $4 million of maintenance during the year. If we move to cash flow on page 9, similar to Q2, free cash flow for the first half of 2022 was down $31 million from the prior year, with earnings growth offset by higher maintenance spending, higher cash interest costs, and working capital timing, including previously mentioned non-recurring transaction costs. We turn to the balance sheet on page 10. We ended the second quarter with roughly $3.4 billion in total debt. On a pro forma LTM basis, the leverage ratio as defined in the 2029 notes indenture and consistent with the corresponding measure in our credit agreement was 5.27 times at the end of Q2. As a reminder, both pro forma adjusted EBITDA and net debt in this calculations excludes the unrestricted subsidiaries. Our liquidity position improved materially during the quarter. We had $374 million of availability under the revolving credit facility at quarter end, up $220 million from the end of March. In addition to providing greater strategic flexibility to invest in the business The increased liquidity provides ample support for ongoing demands of our disciplined energy risk management program. With respect to energy risk management, as you know, we have roughly 80% of our forecasted output swapped to fixed price to the end of calendar 2024. As of June 30th, we had posted $138 million in cash and letters of credit as margin against these positions, roughly consistent with our balance at the end of March. The mark-to-market liability on our energy hedging book as of June 30th was approximately $260 million. I know this point has been made, but I'd like to reiterate again that Covanta is an infrastructure owner, is always long power, and our hedges always settle in conjunction with our physical generation. Said another way, we sell our power at market prices and pass those market prices to our hedge counterparties. We're comfortable that our current liquidity is sufficient to manage our potential exposure under the risk management program, and we continue to work with our counterparties to reduce our collateral requirements. We expect such requirements to remain a fact of our business for the foreseeable future as we navigate through this period of positive but volatile energy pricing. Before I conclude my prepared remarks, I'd like to provide a quick update on other aspects of the business, as well provide some additional color on our two recent acquisitions. First, with respect to the company management, we have made several key executive-level appointments in the past weeks and now have the executive team in place that will execute our strategic plan under EQT ownership. Most recently, we appointed Selma Kervin as president of Covanta Environmental Solutions to lead that rapidly expanding platform. Paul Stouter, who has run that business for the past years, will take on new responsibilities as Chief Revenue Officer. We've also have added Gagan Zood as our Chief Transformation Officer in the business over the past several months. With that, pass off to any questions.
We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. At this time, we'll pause momentarily to assemble our roster. Our first question will come from Brian DeRubio with Baird. You may now go ahead.
Good morning. A number of questions for you, if you may. First of all, before I say that, I do appreciate the fact that you're calculating free cash flow using total capex rather than maintenance. That definitely is an improvement. But wanted to touch on a couple of things. I guess sort of most topical on investors' minds is, you know, you provided a liquidity position as of the end of the quarter, obviously not gas. Prices are up significantly since then. Can you provide us with an update on what total liquidity looks like today?
Total liquidity is, and Jim Temperong, is in line with what it was at the end of June.
In line.
That's right. To put a fine point on it, Brian, so as of literally today, we have liquidity under the revolver of $355 million and about $23 million of domestic cash, right? So at about $380 million of you know, what we consider liquidity.
Okay. Got it. And maybe touching on that, so you had, you know, $60 million of cash at quarter end, but in your filing, you said 26 was domestically held. So did the remaining cash move with the legal separation of the European assets?
Brian, this is Jim. No. I think what where that cash, if we had the detail of that bridge, you'd see some of that go to the acquisitions that we've made.
Okay. Got it. So the $60 million you had was all cash that remained with RemainCo. It didn't go into the split.
You're talking about the June 30 balance sheet?
Yes, the June 30 balance sheet.
Right. Did any of that cash move to the other companies, to the unrestricted, to the European subs?
So there is some of that cash, Brian, was in the unrestricted subsidiaries, right? So the split at June 30 of the 60, $34 million of that cash was international, and just under $5 million of that was in our Canadian entities. The remaining cash was offshore in the UK and Irish chains, right? So the unrestricted subchains, with one exception of our Mauritius chain, which had $2 million. So 7 of the 34 was in our restricted group, with the remainder in the unrestricted subs.
Okay, so 26 plus 7, so 33, and then the balance went with the unrestricted during the legal separation.
That's right.
Okay, that's helpful there. Just on the metal the metal recovery business, one thing that's sort of scratching my head, if you tabulate on an LTM basis, you know, the amount of ferrous and non-ferrous metals that you've been recovering, and then the amount that you're selling, what you're selling is substantially less than what you've recovered. So I guess two questions on the business. A, can you sort of explain that delta, which right now stands at roughly, you know, call it 80 million tons. And then the other question is, you know, what are you seeing in terms of pricing for both ferrous and non-ferrous scrap metal in the third quarter? Thank you.
Yeah, just talk to pricing. We're starting to see the pricing of metals decline from historically high numbers back to the mean, where we've been like sort of on a 10-year average, moving in that direction. And we probably will see that through the end of Q3 and maybe into 1 or 2 months in the month of in Q4. That's on the pricing side.
Mm-hmm.
On the question of related to volumes in recovery and inventory within the metals group, the yields we're experiencing in the metals group is a little bit lower than it's been in the past. And we've had some issues in our plants where our inventory is growing because the selling of the material is lagging behind the production. Does that anything else to add to that, Jim?
No, I don't think so. No.
Okay. That's helpful. So you actually are holding that, but you're just not selling it right away. Is that how I'm reading it? Or if you not sold it right away?
There's been a lag in the selling process. It's just an administrative, like there's nothing to point to anything specific.
Okay.
We're not taking specific actions to do that.
Okay. No. Understood. Just two final quick ones. You know, just how much did you spend on those acquisitions that you've made this quarter? And then just a little disconcerting, you know, this is a disclosure of $2 million interest-free long-term loan that was made to an executive this year. You know, do you know offhand what your capacity to do any more of that? And does the company have plans on making any of those type of loans to its executives?
No, we don't have any more plans to make any more loans. That loan's to facilitate the executive's relocation from Asia to North America and will be repaid maximum over 10 years to support his relocation.
Okay.
There's a schedule of payments to be made by the executive.
Okay. Great. And the amount that you spent on those acquisitions?
Yeah, we'll. It was very immaterial to the whole of the company, and they'll be reported in Q3, and we prefer to leave it like that. You'll see it in the cash flow in Q3. But it's an immaterial number. It's not a big number.
So it both, I guess, immaterial size and immaterial impact to the results of the company, I'm assuming, as well.
Yes.
Very good.
Absolutely.
Appreciate all the color. Thank you.
Our next question will come from David Salpeter with Citadel. You may now go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Just piggybacking on that question around how much cash was spent on the acquisitions, maybe not getting into the weeds on you know, cash on the acquisitions per se, but can you sort of talk a little bit about, you know, your strategy from here, whether you're looking at anything larger in scale, you know, the kinds of businesses you want to look at, you know, kind of how you're thinking about the strategic plan from here, and in particular as it relates to M&A.
Yeah, our strategic plan calls for a build out of our MPF facilities, that's processing industrial waste. Currently, we have additional acquisitions under preliminary LOIs, put it that way, that if we're successful may close in, let's say, order of magnitude 3 to 6 months. Those acquisitions would be a bit larger than the last two, but they're not sort of very material to the whole EBITDA of our business of $523 million. They're kind of additive to that number. We have at least three people dedicated full-time to M&A. So, you know, we expect that to continue to be a feature of builder of our business as we build out our waste infrastructure to support higher value profiled waste versus municipal waste and improve our mix over time.
That's helpful. So these incremental acquisitions, the two slightly more material ones, is the anticipation that those would be funded with some mix of cash and revolver at this point as well, and not incremental equity?
Yeah, those acquisitions should not require additional equity. We should be able to fund that within our current capital structure.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Kareem Mansour with White Fox Advisors. You may now go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. When you guys originally did the syndication, you talked about the fact that you guys had roughly 23% of you're exposed to the market by around 23%. Around 46% of your energy needs were hedged, and the remaining was PPA. Can you give a breakdown again of how you guys are hedged for your energy needs?
Yeah, so energy through 2024, either through PPAs or through hedging contracts. I think it's a slide in the deck. What slide is it, Jim?
On slide 3 of the deck in the bottom left, there's an energy position chart, which lays it out pretty well in megawatt hours.
Okay.
But what you'll see is, you know, for basically through 2024, between hedged positions and our contracted book, we are, you know, roughly 80%, right? It's 78, 77%, right? But we're roughly 80% hedged through calendar 24, and a little less so, obviously, much more open in 2025.
And we're looking to, we're evaluating hedges for 2025 as we speak now.
Okay. And then can you talk about any sort of wage inflation that you've seen? Is that coming through on any sort of healthcare needs for your employees or any sort of actual wage inflation for the salaries?
Yeah, so typically our salaries increase around March of 2023 for the coming year. You know, our plan is to budget, you know, typically we would have budgeted, you know, kind of 2 or 3%. We'd be budgeting, you know, something around 4 or 5% on wages. We do have plans in our, as we're evaluating now, both in our medical and our retiree plans or 401k plans to offset most of any increase in medical costs between adjustments to those plans for the coming calendar year. So we don't really expect the impact of inflation on our medical plans to have a material negative impact to our P&L at all next year, given the changes we anticipate putting in place.
Okay. I'll look through the hedge schedule that you provide on the LP. I just didn't see that saved down to the deal side yet. Thanks so much.
Our next question will come from Nikhil Jain with Genworth Financial. You may now go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Just have two or three questions here. One is a follow-up on the hedging and the collateral need and liquidity. So your liquidity, as you mentioned, you know, essentially has improved quarter over quarter. And the way I see it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that it seems like you've just used some of the cash to post more collateral, so there's less need to kind of have, you know, post, like provide an LC or something against a revolver. Is that how I should read it?
I think two things happened, and Jim will come in wrong. To remind everyone, we increased our revolver capacity to $600 million
right.
In the month of May. I think that's when it increased. May or no, probably June it went up to $600 million. And then our revolving partners have allowed us to use liens instead of posting mark-to-market going forward, thereby allowing us to offset some of the mark-to-market changes that we would have seen to the balance sheet.
All right. And maybe just to add to that, Nikhil, like, so we do have a combination of cash and letters of credit posted to the counterparties that we're still in a marginable structure with, right? We've got on a mark-to-market basis, it's about 20% of our book is in marginable structures. The others are now in either lien or other structures where they're, for the existing hedge book, where we will not need to post collateral. And we're continuing to work on transitioning the remaining marginable structures to a lien-based or an equivalent structure. But as we sit here today, we have roughly $150 million of cash and LCs posted. And as you know, over time, our mark-to-market on this book is rolling off. Obviously, the forwards are going to play a big role in that. But, you know, we're going to stick to the disciplined strategy on energy risk management that we've always had, right, with a rolling hedge book. And as Greg referenced, right, we're taking a look at 25 now because it's falling within the three-year cone that we typically hedge to. But we feel we can manage the existing book as well as the roll-off in a way that'll keep our exposure to the marginable structures, you know, well contained within the liquidity of the revolver and that we have right now.
Okay, got it. So is the plan to, like, as you roll forward, just kind of keep your hedge level kind of at, like, almost 80% level?
That is a general plan that I would say is good to think about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any further conversations with, like, Moody's on kind of this liquidity and with respect to your hedge book?
So we,
Go ahead.
So this is Jim. Yeah, we had obviously a lot of discussions with them earlier in the year, as this wasn't really a Covanta issue, right? It was an industry-wide issue, you know, remains so to some degree. But we remain in contact with them. We've tried to, we reiterate the fact that we feel now the revolver increase and some of the transitions to lien that we've done have really, boxed this issue in fairly well for us. So, hopefully that, we feel comfortable with the exposure now and relay that to the agencies as well.
Got it. Thank you. And then just one question on your revolver covenant calculation. So there is definitely, you have the adjustments that you have, which is, some of them are pro forma related to, growth, for example, cost reduction and, growth investments. I guess I'm just trying. What I'm trying to get to is that do they, at some point do they kind of move more in your actuals? So I'm just trying to figure out what's the timeline in terms of you achieving those, and then that kind of it's not an adjustment, but it's more of a what's kind of really flowing through your results.
Right. This is Jim again. Right. There are three broad buckets that we've, been using on that bridge from, what we call adjusted EBITDA to pro forma adjusted EBITDA. Our credit agreement and the related definitions are flexible in this regard. But what we've identified broadly are buckets that over time, to your point, will roll off. Some of these initiatives are on the come, right? We have the ability with that definition to pull forward benefits from actions that we've taken. There are a number of actions, underway at the company across a variety of fronts. So that's what you're seeing reflected there. As those come in, to actuals, we will, you know, that will roll off the add back and put in the actual, right? So that will happen over time here. And I think, you know, broadly, if you know, we wouldn't expect a material, you know, bump in those necessarily, right? We started out with $43 million of pro forma adjustments. You know, we're at 54 here. We feel we're being, you know, pretty.
I think, you know, we have a chief transformation officer in place now, identifying, you know, operational improvements in the business. You know, so we're working on different items to improve the profitability of the business. The business is quite strong. But, you know, since EQT's ownership, we've identified other areas for growth. And, you know, we expect to be reinvesting capital in the business, both for growth and operating improvements. And as we learn and make sure that we're confident in those projects, you know, then we'll reevaluate this on each quarterly basis. But the big point is these things do roll off and in 1 or 2 years and they become part of our results.
Okay, got it. So just to take the components, the growth piece, is that like kind of when we see your growth CapEx or M&A related CapEx, is that what's baked into that?
Yeah, that'll be associated most with growth CapEx, right? And yep.
And the revenue and pricing adjustments, are those just like contract related? So like this, you know, you had new contracts and price increases in this contract this year. Is that what that line item would be?
Yes, broadly, right? So we're able to, when we enter into or negotiate a new contract with higher pricing, we're able to take that pricing adjustment up front. Obviously, that's a schedule that will roll off, to your point. But yeah, there's contract pricing across, you know, all the waste streams, and as well as a piece on the rec side of the house that goes into that bucket.
Okay, so you mentioned that you had, you know, some contracts kind of come in with respect to you kind of your EBITDA bridge, you know, with respect to higher pricing. So what's your guide on kind of, you know, like contract repricing over the next 6 months?
Yeah, that's a very complicated question, right? Some of our contracts are multi-year contracts, even a decade, right? And there's many different factors of, we have 30 plants and hundreds of contracts, so all with different things. So it's really an impossible question to really ask without getting into some excruciating detail.
No, sorry. But I'm not looking for a specific number, but like, do you have additional contracts? Like, is there some sort of a cadence that, like, you know, another 6 months you're expecting, you know, I don't know, X percent of your contracts to again come reset?
Yeah, we candidly, in the business, across the business and across the fleet, we're renewing contracts like all the time. You know, they roll at the different plants throughout the calendar year. There aren't any material contracts I'd point to through the end of 22 or 23. You know, there are a couple of contracts in 23, the city, you know, Washington D.C. and City of Philadelphia that are, you know, decent sized contracts, but not even then, not in the scale of what we're processing. You know, what I'd say is the secular growth drivers that Greg noted at the, you know, in his prepared remarks are very much intact, particularly in New England, right, where we're declining landfill capacity, the increased cost of landfilling and long hauling to distant landfills is very supportive of our pricing. And, you know, with that dynamic underlying the markets and in key waste sheds that we operate, plus the inflation dynamic when most of our contracts were very contracted on the revenue side with escalators, right, between where CPI is and that underlying secular dynamic, you know, the pricing story remains very firm. You know, and we'd anticipate that going forward.
Got it. Thank you. And just, sorry, one final question. You talked about M&A. Are there any dispositions that you're targeting as well with respect to your assets that are not efficient or not, you know, cold?
There's no dispositions. We do have some service fee plants within our fleet where contracts are, you know, will be expiring over the next 5 years, and each one of those plants will be looked at to renegotiate the contract. And if we can't come to economics that make sense for us, you know, we will not renew those contracts. But actual disposition of sales of own assets, we have nothing planned.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Our next question will come from Paul Nicholson with Matthew Shields. You may now go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I kind of wanted to follow up on the last question there. So on, I was going back through some of your comments your previous management team made as a public company. There was some discussion, I think, in 2021 of the operated facilities kind of needing to stand on their own 2 feet, not generating very much free cash flow, et cetera. Is that still the case in the power and metal price environment that we're in? Or I guess help me understand how you're thinking about your operated facilities and how those economics may have changed. Thanks.
Yeah, so as Jim talked about, you know, we have a strong position, a strengthening position within those facilities over time. And as those contracts roll off, we will renegotiate those contracts to our benefit or we won't. And if it's not to our benefit and economical for us, we'll walk away from those owned agreements. There are, like I said, three or four of those contracts are currently economically not really viable the way we have them structured. And I would say from 2024 through 2026, the three or four of those that we're looking at strongly with our municipal partners.
Okay, fair enough. And then on your own facilities, I know I'm new to this company, but I know your main competitor, Wheelbrader, they had closed some facilities after facing kind of public criticism and things like that in Florida. I know you guys have some facilities in Florida. I'm just curious, do you feel on your own facilities, do you feel any significant pressure from the local communities or anything, new regulations, et cetera, that make you concerned about the viability of any of your 18 owned facilities over the next couple of years? And that's it for me. Thanks.
You know, we're very active with our local communities. We have a new leader, Tequila Smith, who was the head of governmental relations, and we're working with that and reaching out to our congressmen and local communities. We environmental justice, we support that activity within our communities. So within our current fleet, we do not see any material impact related to, you know, environmental justice within our communities. We're working really well with them. One of our plants in Camden requires a large investment. We'll be working with the local community to extend our permits for multiple years. The alternative to us is going to landfill, which is much less environmentally friendly than our current plants. And in Florida, the Florida plants are well supported. Our Florida plants, at least, are well supported by our local communities. They have very little landfill capacity. So while people may want to do these things, you know, we are a much better solution than going to landfill.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Again, if you have a question, please press star then one. Our next question will come from Craig Robinson with Credit Suisse. You may now go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking the questions. I guess just first, you know, when thinking about the separation of the UK assets, you know, if we're looking at EBITDA, do we just basically back out the dividends that you've been receiving, and then that's pretty much all the EBITDA that you've been reporting there?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we have it on what page of the deck, Jim? Will we break out?
Slide 5 has the adjusted EBITDA for the second quarter, Craig. And what we've done on the stacked bars with the legend is, yeah, to your point, yes, you would back out the cash dividends received, which was in our definition of EBITDA. And that's the 16 that you'll see in Q2 of 22. And that compares to $4 million that was in the number last year. And then you'll see we're also adjusting out the losses of that business, right? So the Asian and European subsidiaries, on a P&L basis, right, from an O&M standpoint, are losing money, right, as that platform ramps up, as many of those plants remain still in construction, so they haven't hit their full capacity yet. So we're also adjusting out that loss.
Okay, so that's why your LTM kind of reduction is a little bit different than your LTM dividends that you received. That would be the difference. Okay.
Yeah, there's more than just the dividend, right? Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Then just a question on, the metal, following up on the metals question earlier, looking back historically, every year you're selling decently less volumes than you're recovering. What's driving that, and what do you do with these recovered metals if you're not selling them?
Yeah, Craig, it's I think of late the yields are down, but we've seen that before. I don't think there's enough data to make any statement about why yields are down relative to where we're going. I remember too, as we're processing at the Fairless Hills facility, the waste and the metals come in the ash, right? We clean it, right? So there's a variance from our cleaning process at Fairless Hills too, which is going to show up in that number. But I wouldn't draw any major conclusions from this really beyond the fact that, at the end of the day, when you think of metal extraction for us, we're going to remain committed to metals extraction, as any metal pulling out of the back of our plants, right, is just reducing our disposal costs, right? Because if we're not pulling it out, we're going to pay to landfill it. We're going to continue to focus on extraction and use the processes that we've been using with respect to enhancing the value of those metals, right, which is cleaning them up, sorting them in the facilities that, we can do that in order to gain a better price. But, we're not, I wouldn't say there's anything more going on than that, right, in that dynamic. We're moving the tons when we can, right, and selling them.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, looking back historically, on the ferrous side, you sell about 85 to 90% of what you recover, and then non-ferrous, it's, 65 to 70, looking back several years. So it sounds like it's kind of a difference in the reporting of when you recover it versus what you sell it, because you do lose some during the process. Is that right? Just because, I'm not saying that anything's actually getting worse here, but just kind of interesting how you're consistently recovering more than you're selling.
Yeah, I think that's right, Craig, right?
Okay, so nothing changing. All right, and then just lastly on the hedge book, can you give any direction just on, we see the volumes hedged, but just on the hedge prices that you're achieving and how they relate to historical prices, looking so far this year, your hedged revenue megawatt per hour is up significantly year over year. Just kind of wondering how is that even happening if your volumes were hedged 3 years in advance?
So on our unhedged, I'll try to answer it if I don't answer it correctly. So our unhedged book, we're experiencing much higher prices in the market versus our hedge book. So we're benefiting there significantly on the 20% that's not hedged. And so our hedge book is below the market today. Does that answer your question?
I mean, I guess if you provide all these KPIs, like hedged revenue per megawatt hour was up 50% year over year. And so I'm just kind of wondering, when were these hedges put in place, and how when you're looking out, is your hedge portfolio at prices above, what it's in your LTM, below, at, just to give a sense of that?
Yeah, well, we in the one chart, right, we show, right, that breakdown of our book between hedged and contracted, right? The average hedge prices, it's a mix of time in that program, was a rolling program. But I can tell you that our average hedge prices for 23 and 24 are between $37 and $38 a megawatt hour. Right, so we're obviously entered into those, in 2022, towards the end of last 21, actually the end of last year. Right, so this is, you know, well below current market prices, which is why the hedge book is in that net liability position. But as you know, we are benefiting from current market prices on the 20% of the book that is open to the market. Right.
And if we were to hedge 2025, it would be at prices higher than we are seeing today, based on the market curves we're seeing. So significantly higher prices than the 37 or 38 Jim talked about, and that's why we're looking at 2025 hedges right now.
Okay, yeah, that's exactly what I was getting at. Okay, thanks a lot. That's it.
This concludes our question and answer session. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Greg Cam with any closing remarks.
Hey guys, thanks for participating in the call. And I've been here since May. I'm learning the business, so appreciate the questions. Hopefully, able to give response to them. You know, it's a great business we have, sustainable platform, moving more and more to industrial waste, profiled waste. Improving our mix over time. We started to see that during the first half of the year. A new management team in place. We're looking at all parts of the business to improve this great business from where it is moving forward, both operationally, M&A. We're looking at growth in the business. So it's a pleasure to be part of this great team and working with Jim and the rest of the team and Aziz Muhammad, our CEO. So any other questions you may have that we didn't answer, you know, I encourage you to, send them up to Jim.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.